Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway. This is a podcast focused on the electric and zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Sarah Sloman, not the usual John Curtis or Paul Kirby, and I won't be joined by any member of the EV Cafe crew because they are all off doing very important things, and I have taken a little bit of time out of my pay-through day to talk to a very esteemed guest who I am jumped at the chance to have on the podcast. The whole point of this series is about having people on who we feel are pioneers, our innovators and collaborators of our industry. So sometimes they cover a breadth of subjects, and this person definitely will. So once again, thank you for agreeing to be part of this. Thomas Edwards, hello.
Hi, Sarah, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you. Now, I know that you've prepared a wonderful little intro for me that's going to show how you have come to be on the show today. Take it away.
That would suggest I'm going to read out what I sent to you last night, and I'm not going to do that. So let me try and remember what I actually said.
No.
So, look, I spent a big part of my career in financial services, and back about 5 years ago, had a bit of an epiphany in life that I should be lending my skills and expertise, I guess, to something which had a bit more value to the world directly. So, I wouldn't be criticizing the financial services industry, but something I can sort of help change a little bit that I really believed in. So I ended up through that process switching into clean technology, and which ultimately led to a long stint as the CMO and then the sort of commercial lead for a Portuguese software charging platform. And then more recently in the UK, helping Switch EV sort of expand internationally with their commercial growth. So I'm currently there with those guys, and it's a great story that they're telling and that I'm helping to bring to the masses. So yeah, that's my journey. There's other bits along the way that I can talk about in very different, I'm sure it'll come out in this conversation, but really, yeah, financial services into clean technology, and now a player or a collaborator, as you suggested, in the EV space.
You got that so incredibly spot on. I wanted you to say that you leapt into clean tech, which is what it says, but you did miss out that you live in Suffolk with your family and you have a penchant for vintage fountain pens, guitars and vinyl, and Swiss horology. I don't know what a horology is.
I was obviously being very creative last night when I wrote that. I throw in a French reference like penchant. I do. I live in Suffolk with my family. I'm lucky to do that. I do love Suffolk, actually. And actually, where we are here, where this house is I've been sitting in now, is in Ipswich. And there's a bit of an EV sort of expertise sort of hub here in Ipswich. We have some people that might come up in conversation who live in and around the town. But fountain pens, silly collection, really. But, you know, how many fountain pens do you need? One is probably the answer, or zero, actually, today.
But I have none.
Yeah, many,
how many have you got?
Yeah, many. I have many more than that. And then Swiss horology. Yeah, it's timekeeping, isn't it? Watches and things like that. So,
I'm glad you explained it. And I apologize to anybody in the audience who's thinking, come on, Sarah, you must have known that. Well, I bet lots of other people didn't too.
Yeah, so it was a nice way to describe that I've spent too much money in my life on silly watches.
And for those of you who are listening in, this is a dual purpose, so you can either watch it back on our channels or YouTube, or like I do, tend to listen in the car. I'll just describe to you what is behind Thomas. We've got a wall of music and photos and art, and I can't quite see them, but I know there are guitars there somewhere and amplifiers. So people, if you do ever get the chance to talk to Thomas Edwards about this, I'm sure you will all have something in common. Now, just going back
the wall behind me, sorry, Sarah. When I'm trying to renovate this old house we live in, and we have a cellar underground which has got three or four rooms in it, and one corner of one of the rooms was just full of boxes and boxes of CDs. So they were taking up space that I didn't really want to take up. So I thought, I don't want to throw them away. They're part of your history, right? They're part of your. I can see Sade there. Look above my finger. One of her greatest hits. And they have a story in your life, don't they, that when you listen to certain music and things. So I didn't want to throw them away, and I didn't want to spend any time storing them. So I think, though, that's about 400 on the wall behind me there. I think that's quite a neat way to do it. So they don't take really any space when you stick them to the wall. But I tell you what does happen When the wall temperature changes, they fall off.
They just ping open. Do they fall off?
They fall off.
Open
and, drop the and then they fall off like dominoes as well. So if one at the top comes off, then they kind of take the ones underneath on. So any given day, I come up to into this room and I might find that there's three or six or seven on the floor, which is always good fun to see which ones they are. So I apologize if you hear a clatter in this conversation and loads of pictures drop the wall, but they're CDs. Yeah.
Innovator, collaborator, CD and pen collector. I think we've got your number already. Now, we were talking about Suffolk, and it is actually bizarre how many people who will be listening to this podcast know have come from Suffolk, not least of all wonderful Claire Miller of Octopus fame and now Independent Consulting, helping everyone transform everything. She's extremely busy. You also have a very forward-thinking local authority there who are pulling together EV charging for their residents and businesses. And Linda Grave, I believe. Have I got that geography right?
Yes, absolutely right. So all three of those, Linda and Matthew, I guess, is the big representative from the council, Matthew Ling. Claire, all I would class as friends of mine, I guess. And also you have the great Richard Earle, actually, as well, who's the R&D lead at EO. EO are only up the road. And there are others. There are others around, and we're trying to bring as much talent and business actually into the county as possible. Yeah. And Senex are doing an event here in Ipswich in May, right? So it's good.
Yeah. Well, you guys are definitely putting it on the map, and every event we go to, there's always one of those four that we just mentioned cropping up. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, and whenever I listen to wonderful John and Paul do these podcasts, they always like to delve into a little bit about what really prompted your move into sustainability? Because obviously we just brushed over it there, but as you said, very successful career. And then you suddenly thought, I want to make something a bit more impactful, I guess, something that's a bit more measurable, a bit more sustainable. No, did you have a particular trigger that made you want to take that leap? Was it meeting these people locally? What was it?
They'd love that, wouldn't they, if I said that it was all to do to a meeting, with Claire Miller in the wine bar that's in town that we occasionally meet in. No, it wasn't that, but there was a moment, there was a defined moment. And it was actually one of my daughters who said to me one day, you know, Dad, what do you do in work? That question, you know, that comes up. And I dismissed it and said, it's boring, don't worry about it. Right. This is when I was in financial services. And then I sort of thought about that for a while and thought, actually, that's a terrible thing to say to your daughter. You spend so much time in work and doing work, and that's the time you're not spending with your kids. Why am I describing it as boring? And also, for her to enter the workforce at some point, surely she should be a bit more inspired by the work she's doing in the world rather than just it's boring, it's a means to an end. So I did a bit of soul search, and I really sort of had to think about what I wanted, what I wanted to achieve for the next part of my career. And that's where it came from, really. It was kind of this, well, can I add some good to the world rather than just making wealthy people even wealthier, which is ultimately what I was doing in the private banking world that I was in, and I was in the technology space there. So it was really that sort of epiphany to say, actually, well, surely I can do something better with these skills and talents that I've amassed over the years and built. And that led me to Portugal, yeah, and working with the great Jane Hoffer, who was head of a company called, who was the CEO of a company called Go With Flow at the time, which we rebranded. But working with her was fantastic, and we that was sort of sealed my sort of interest really in this sort of space, and led me to continue that with Switch EV. It was an epiphany. That's what I like to describe it as, an epiphany.
It was an epiphany. Epiphany whilst holding a posh fountain pen, I hope.
So exactly. Are they posh? I don't know. What do you describe as posh?
Yes.
Some of them are.
Yeah, I absolutely would describe, I would describe them as completely posh. Unless, like me, you went to a school that was a bit rough around the edges. And the reason I think they're posh is because I used to try and stand out by having a parka. That was as advanced as my fountain pen experience ever got. And I have a Remarkable now, and I lost the Remarkable pen yesterday. So I'm not even writing a single thing by hand, probably ever again.
Yeah, so on that, again, you know, poshness, it's like what it comes from, port out starboard home, doesn't it? It's the where you sat on a ship. That's where the words POSH come from, which would be sort of stamped.
POSH,
port out starboard home. But on that basis, if you're comparing it to a parka, then yes, they would be considered posh.
But thank you for acknowledging that. Yeah, so that's good news.
Yeah, I can't remember we were, but yeah, the fountain pen's a funny one. I think I'm attracted to things that are glossy. And I think if you delve into that even more, there's a human need to be attracted to things that are glossy, because I think it's to do with our search for water. So reflective surfaces are very attractive to our brains. So that's why we like things that are shiny, I think. I think it's that.
Wow.
But yeah, I have quite a few of those things. But I don't use them either. Like, they're just there for display, really.
There's no need. There's no need. Well, I was thinking about your family and your children and the fact that you do lots of renovation on your home, and that sort of need to kind of angle your expertise towards, instead of, as you say, sort of making wealthy people more wealthy, perhaps making the world of sustainability more efficient. And we met once at the EV Summit. I think I'm going to say, I'm not sure which year that was. I think it was 2022. And we were very lucky to go out for a meal with Jonathan Jenkins from Motability Operations. He's the head of innovation, or was his title then. And we started talking, Thomas, actually, about the importance of software and how software can help unlock the capabilities of the hardware, because people are so obsessed with getting chargers in the ground as quickly as possible, as much government funding as possible for that side of things. And I so often feel the software side is massively overlooked. Now, I know you do a lot of things for our industry, but right now you're with Switch EV. So can you give our audience a flavor for what Switch EV does?
Of course. And you hit the nail on the head there, really, with regards to that. You know, it's the easiest thing to understand, I think, EV charging, because of the charging device, right? So you think, I need EV charging in my fleet or in my workplace or for my community, whatever it might be. Therefore, I need EV chargers. It's very easy to picture that. And they replicate some in some way a traditional sort of roadside fuel on demand type model. They look a bit similar. You know, they're a thing that sticks out of the ground and gives you energy. But really, beyond that, you're absolutely right. So the software that powers those and links them together is probably of more importance than the device itself. So you have a number of providers like Switch EV, and there are others. There are Fuse, Clenergy, Spirii
as well.
Exactly. Yeah. We should mention them as one of your sponsors, right? And a lot that do the similar thing, right? So there's a charge point management platform. And essentially what that enables people to do, if they're running a network, and that network can be distributed internationally as well as nationally or across a town, across a city, or across a number of car parks, doesn't matter. It enables someone like you or me to sit in a nice warm office like we are now, to manage those charge points as they're operational in the field. So that can be as simple as turning it on and off and resetting it, or setting the price, or setting the time it's available. But also what's really important, and this will resonate with many of the people listening or watching, is that it actually helps you maintain their uptime. It's because that platform, that management platform, will be showing where there are errors or show where there's about to be errors. And if you've got a very good platform that tells you that, you'll be in a better position to keep your chargers online. And that's really the crucial thing, right? In that there is, you know, it's a silly thing to say, but there's no point in a charger that isn't working. It doesn't help anyone. So with the right management platform, you can ensure that your network is operational all the time. And you can make sure that you can control it and monitor it and manage it, whatever you need to do, manage the drivers, manage its access, manage its price point. So it's the tool you really need to turn your chargers into a business, or to manage your workplace or your fleet vehicles and make sure they're all being charged according to when they're needed. So Switch EV have one of those, the charge point management platform. But also it's really interesting that actually it bases that upon, or it's linked to, an operating system. And that operating system can be installed on a charging device. That's called Joseph. So essentially you have two elements at Switch EV. You have the operating system for a charging device, and then the platform that enables you to manage any charging device. So those two things plugged in together are kind of unbeatable, really. The key thing there is that both of those things run on OCPP 2.0.1. And most of our, or your listeners, I guess, know what that is, but it's the Open Charge Point protocol, the communications method, basically, that everyone should be signed up to make sure all of these devices talk together. 2.0.1 is the most latest the most recent that's in the field, if you like. There are versions coming, but you know, that's the current version. And that enables that really detailed advanced diagnostics to enable you to ensure that your charge points are up and running. So for example, you can see through OCPP2 that your fan speed might be slightly off, and you might therefore anticipate that the fan needs to be replaced. Send someone out to replace that before the charger goes down. Now, using OCPP 1.6, you wouldn't get that granular level of information. So there's a big difference there. That's one example, but essentially OCPP 2.0.1 is much more advanced with all that sort of stuff. So if you are building a charge point network today to future-proof it, you need the OCPP 2.0.1 functionality. And it also brings in the plug and charge stuff and vehicle to grid, which is all through ISO 15118. God, all these numbers that I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? So the International Standards Office 15118 is what you need to be looking for the vehicle to grid stuff. So yeah, all of that is incorporated in it. And Switch EV, based in London and Germany, we're doing that internationally.
Yeah, and I think that you hit the correct word for me there in your part. By the way, you do explain things very beautifully. I do really enjoy listening to your explanation of these things. I hope the listeners agree. But the word was future-proofing, and that's something I spend so much time talking about. But there is a balance to strike. There's a lot of chargers out there which are 1.6 and will remain 1.6 until their legitimate lifespan expires, because I don't want to see piles of chargers being ripped out that were perfectly functional, but perhaps not tip top, and something that we encounter a lot at Pay3 and you at Switch and other CPMS charge point management systems will say is we all want to have the best of the best and the most futuristic scenario at this stage. But actually, with the rate of growth, is it selling the future problem today that we should be sort of focused on? Or is there a way to use these data protocols and software to kind of enhance and extend the life of the hardware that we've already invested carbon and money in creating? What's the answer? Is there a balance?
Well, that's really interesting. So I think two sides to that, I think, at least. Let's see if I find a third as I talk about it. But you're absolutely right. And the key thing for me there, the first side, if you like, well, the first thing I was going to bring up is that you can have the best product in the world, but if it's not ready for market, or the market's not ready for it, should I say, then it's pretty pointless, right? So you're absolutely right to draw that out to say, you know, is the market ready for something like OCPP 2.0.1? 1.6 is functional, and that's what most people have and operate on, so that's fine, right? The other bit of that, it kind of relates back to the operating system. So there is potential that you can upgrade certain hardware that's already in the ground to that OCPP 2.0.1 level without the big changeover in device. Now, it's not for everyone. You have to have certain requirements, if you like, for that to happen. But it is possible. So there's that way you can switch it. And then there is a third. The third thing is it was all about the big funding grants that aren't necessarily just in the UK, but in the US in particular, that are sort of mandating now, if you want access to the NEVI fund, for example, you have to show a sort of hardware and software that is OCPP 2.0.1 compliant. So to get access to those funds, you need to be in this world rather than we're going to do it with 1.6. So, you know, other countries will follow if they're not there already. So that demand will only increase, I think.
That's encouraging. Is that all three of your sides? I didn't want to interrupt your flow.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. I kind of, I think I reached two sides originally, but I got to three, didn't I? Slight sides wasn't the right thing to say either, but you know, there's three aspects that I wanted to talk about there.
No, and my there isn't a day that goes by where I don't spend time talking to large fleets thinking about converting and trying to work out what they want to do. Is it mostly depot based? Is it out and about? Do they want to just do everything with credit card enablement and expense everything? Or do they want a system designed for them? So these charge, I remember there was an amazing time in my life where it was all about research and seeing these things coming. So the 1.6 was a nervousness. There was a nervousness around its capabilities to be so incredibly powerful in its data availability that we were on about cyber attacks, like almost millennium bug level scaring about what could happen to your charges if you left them on 1.6 as an open data. But, you know, that didn't happen. And so lots of thought went into how to stop that from happening and how to remove those fear factors. But it is the fleet drivers who I consistently feel sorry for, because they're often given a vehicle they didn't necessarily ask for that then has to go home, which was easy before because they've got a fuel station around the corner. They don't yet have a charger around the corner. But the power of the mobile phone, be that a personal mobile phone or a work mobile phone, can help that driver feel more secure that they'll get the charge where and when they need it. But how can we use software to unlock an opportunity for that type of driver, somebody whose every penny, every day counts, and they're doing the right thing by going EV. Do you foresee a way that the software side of things can be far more integrated to things like perks? I saw Octopus are giving away Greggs, sausage rolls and hot drinks when you have them as your... I mean, can't we do that for drivers? Surely there must be a way.
I think you can. Of course you can. And just to go back to that fleet driver you described there who has a fuel station around the corner, I never did the analysis, but I did write a piece once about this type of driver. And whether, you know, if you multiply this by what I'm about to tell you, by how many drivers there are in a fleet, whether this is a significant issue or not. So a driver maybe takes a 5 or 10 minute detour out of their day to go to a fuel station. It takes them maybe 5 or 10 minutes to fuel up if there's a pump immediately available. And then they get sort of delayed because they're looking at the headlines on the newspaper stand when they're about to pay. And then they buy some chocolate and have a coffee and all that sort of stuff. And then get back to their vehicle. So a fuel stop out of a driver's day where every minute counts, as you pointed out, could be something like 20 minutes, right? Could be. If you multiply that by 1,000 drivers, I'm not a mathematician, but I'm guessing you get to 20,000 minutes. If you multiply that by how many times it happens over the year or stuff, how much time is actually being lost in that refueling process? It's actually probably a considerable number and one that you want to sort of tackle somehow. And the difference there between that and an EV charging session, of course, is that the EV charging session is kind of inactive, right? So there's a passive process. It's a passive process. Whereas the fueling on petrol or diesel is actually, you've got to be involved. You've got to go and plug it in. You've got to go and do something and wait and pay and all that sort of stuff. And the things I just mentioned about the shop. Whereas an EV, you plug it in, you walk away, you can do whatever you want. It can be done overnight. There's an absolute saving there. And if someone wanted to do a load of research in it, you'd be able to sort of argue quite strongly that actually there's a big cash saving over a large fleet with regards to how much time would be spent wasted or currently wasted, how much time you can get back through an EV process instead. But with software, which is what you were talking about, it becomes really, really interesting because you can actually, if you get it right, like they do in Portugal, all of the public available charge points are connected to the same piece of software. Well, they were. It's changing. And that means if you do that, you can charge wherever you want to. You're not tied to a certain brand or a certain location. You can charge wherever you want to, and the software will enable the correct billing and the correct accounting behind that. And once you know that, you can start to engage your drivers, okay? You can start to pass messages. You know what? By the way, whilst you're charging your vehicle at location X, at McDonald's in Bridgend, wherever it might be, right? You can then tell them over the road, there's something more interesting you can go and do. There's this place you can go and work. There is a place where you can go and buy a Snickers bar or a pasty, which you can place on your dashboard as you're driving around in a van, right? Whatever you want to do, you can use the software to do that and to power that process. And of course, there becomes a secondary market, therefore, if you like, because you can start to sell advertising space. You can start to engage drivers and vehicles and companies much more through that charging process. And when you feel as a user that you belong and you're part of that sort of wider ecosystem, it just encourages you to be part of it even more. But you can personalize it. I could then say, my software could say, Sarah, I know you like to go to McDonald's for your breakfast or Greg's, wherever it might be, right? And I can start So I can start to profile you, right? And actually understand you and your habits. And I can start to pitch information to you that's targeted at you as a person. Of course, the software can power that. You know, the key bit would be how you link everything together. Now, in Portugal, as I mentioned, that was kind of mandated by the government originally, which was a big leg up and a big step forward, a big sort of plus point, I guess, to enable adoption in Portugal. We don't have that in the UK. But with regards to future reporting of charging activity, dare I say it, potential taxation of charging activity to replace the sort of fuel tax, you can see why at some point they might mandate some sort of linkage with it or a data layer that sort of pulls everything together. Once that's in place, then all of these things are sort of unlocked and can be provided, I'm sure.
I think it's super exciting and it'll definitely offer a bit of a encouragement to people, particularly I'm very open about this. I don't have a home charger. I haven't had a home charger. I've been driving electric since 2018. And the first time I did that calculation for how long people spend refueling was back in 2010. And I estimate it to be 14 minutes. So you think you're filling up your car fast, but as you say, you're not, you're faffing about. Now, this conversation flips on its head in a way, because we're doing lots of development around how long would you like to stay? Driver, please tell me. Are you going to the gym for 2 hours? Are you in the office for 8 hours? Then let's load balance your charge so you're full to go, absolutely full to go. But we might be giving it to other drivers that only are here for one or two hours, which I think is a great use of software. And I've only really come to work in the office today because I knew I could charge for a few hours before I've got to go off at lunchtime. So it makes you change your behaviour. And this is what technology should absolutely do. And the words in my mind are destination charging. We're obsessed with the strategic road network and the deployment of DC charging with contactless provision. But actually, I think the AC market is getting vastly overlooked. And I did speak to Melanie Shuffle-Botham from ZapMap about this, because of course, of the 3,000 chargers that we've got in the UK today, nearly 40,000 of those are those slightly older, perhaps, AC units with the 1.6 capability. But they're not dead in the water. They serve a huge part of the charging needs. And destinations with car parks and gyms and offices. If only that, there's a great phrase going around, which I think Sam Clark did start, and it got adopted on the EV rally last year, and it's all over LinkedIn this week because that people are using it. It's, I don't stop to charge, I charge because I've stopped. And I always feel a little bit like, I love that, because that's true-ish. Like if you need to stop for a drink or the toilet, hopefully there's a charger that you can use. We've all had experiences where that is not the case, particularly not if you're lucky enough to be doing your journey on a motorway or a main road. So I think until we've got destination chargers in most locations, that phrase isn't going to work for everyone.
I think it's spot on, right? And I phrased it in a different way a couple of years back in another piece that I was part of. And it was really about the switch from that sort of feasting on energy that we have been used to, or most people I think are used to, as in you fill up your car with fuel and you empty the tank and then you fill it back up again. That's a feast, right? Whereas actually in the EV space, you're really sort of grazing on energy. So everywhere you go, just get a little bit more. Just get a little bit more to get you onto the next place. That's all you really need to do, right? You just need to, wherever you're going to go next. If destination charging is ubiquitous and everywhere you park your car, there's going to be a charging facility, you only need to add a couple of percent in each time to get to where you need to be next. And that's really interesting if you think about that model, because if you actually aren't spending a lot of time charging, it's just half an hour, 2 hours, whatever it might be, it's going to be cheaper for you as well. Because actually, as we all know, the 80 to 100% charge cost is much more than the 20 to 80%. So if you can keep it in those middle bands, that's fantastic, right? So you just need to top it up and top it up and top it up. And you can only do that with confidence if it is everywhere, which isn't at the moment. But that's the world we're going towards, right? And that would be fantastic, right? It just becomes normal then, and especially then if you introduce the plug and charge technology, whereas actually you literally are plugging it in and walking away. And then you drive off again. Obviously, you unplug it first, but you drive off again. And everywhere you go, you're going to continue to have energy in your car. That's fantastic, Will, to be in. The days of pulling up and dedicating your life to where am I going to find somewhere to charge and how do I build that into my day will kind of disappear, right? It just, wherever your car's stopped, that's when it's going to be charging. Or supplying energy back to the grid. So you plug it in and off you go.
When you're idling, yeah. That would be very supportive. I was at the National Grid's NGED, which is what used to be Western Power Distribution. So it's one of the DNOs, Distribution Network Operators. They run a forum called the Customer Connections Committee. And I was there yesterday. Never before do I feel so slow trying to keep up with everything that they're talking about. But it was just really interesting to hear them managing that demand. And something like vehicle to grid can definitely, on a locality, in a local area, reduce that peak demand. But the phrase that's going around now, which I really do like, the one I just said that we're pretty sure Sam Clark gets the credit for, is I don't stop to charge, I charge because I stopped, is in recognition of how far we've come with the rapid charging network. It is so much better this year than it was last year. Next year will be phenomenally better again. So, you know, the big hitters there, of course, the ones I use, the top three for me, just because of where I live, is Osprey, is GridServe, and is Instabolt. They're most places I can find them pretty easily. Whereas a year ago, it was a bit of a stress trying to make sure that I found my next rapid charger. Now we share something in common. And the day that we met, we suddenly went, "You're joking? No, you don't know that place, do you?" And it was because we found out that we have a joint favourite place, which I won't give the exact name away because everyone might go. I don't think I want everyone to go. It's a very special place right over in Pembrokeshire. And we were talking about that. And the reason I'm raising it now is there is one National Trust car park there. And in order to get to that National Trust car park, it's a 4.5-hour drive for me. Well, I'm fine until about Cardiff. then I'm completely stuffed and I've got virtually nothing when I get to where I want to go to charge up again, except for the town of Pembroke, where there's a couple of 50 kilowatts. So in a scenario like that, how great would it be if there was a row of sevens, 1.6, you know, not a big deal for me to use.
I think, you know what, referring back to that moment, that it was such a strange moment for me to meet a sort of, you know, a new person, as we were to each other at that point, and you to start to refer to places that I assume very few people in the world know about, and especially the specific part. Most people would know the beach next door to that rather than the one that you mentioned in particular. And it's where I come from in the world. That's where I sort of grew up and went to school and everything. Literally, and I hate using that word, but this is correct. Literally, two fields away from that beach is where my primary school was, right? So it was fantastic to hear that. And I think from that point on, we had a bit of a bond in that shared experience of going, you know what, yeah, I've been there. I know that place. But you're absolutely right. And funnily enough, I was told recently, and I'm sure someone will contact you to tell you this is nonsense, but I was told recently about the National Trust that they did a survey at some point when they started to sort of flirt with the idea of EV charging. And they were asking their membership on the reasons why they had joined. And I think they had a ridiculously high percentage of respondents that said, because of your car parks. They were members of the National Trust because of the location of the car park and the access to the car park. Which for them is brilliant, right? Because then they can say, okay, well, that's the reason. Let's put loads of charging in and monetize it. But in that particular part of the world that you're talking about, you know, you're right. It's so remote. It's so far away from even the nearest town, which is Pembroke. You're talking 6 or 7 miles away from that. Between Pembroke and, I guess, Temby, Carmarthen. I've never looked into it. I don't know what facilities are down there now. But then,
Swansea, got a good hold there. There's definitely a good, as I say, when you're on the M4, you're absolutely fine. When you start to go off, you need one or two 50s, but Osprey and Instavort in particular have started to put a couple of 125s in. You know, it is getting much easier. So do we need it? Do we need suppliers like the National Trust, who are only 6-7 miles away from a rapid charger, to get battery storage on site, solar arrays on site, because it's pretty much off grid? So, I mean, in that instance, I would pretty much say no. But the car park statistic is, I think car parks are fascinating. There you go. Got that on tape.
That's your fun facts, Sarah. When everyone asks you what your fun facts are, you're going to say, I think
that I like car parks are
fascinating. Yeah, quite. Before you do that, I'll forget it otherwise. Let me jump in. You've got an added issue there in particular because it's a national park. So if you want to put in a massive battery there or a solar farm, you're going to run into a lot of problems because they say, well, no, you're not. This is a national park. We're not going to do that here. Of course we're not, because it will upset the natural wonder and beauty of the limestone cliffs and the location that's there, right? So it's they're all complicated things, but Instavort in particular, I like. Adrian and Neil, they're good guys doing the right thing by the country and elsewhere, I'm sure, over the coming months and years. So, you know, that tourist destination type charging is really quite interesting as well. Down in Pembrokeshire that you're mentioning, you're talking about there's sort of lots of holiday parks and campsites and that sort of thing. And I think it's really interesting to sort of work out how, if you have a big influx of demand or increase in demand in a particular season, how does the local infrastructure cope with that? So if you've got one sort of charging hub I'll throw out places now that are down in that part of the world, in Kilgetty, which is a bit of a junction between going off to Temby or Haverford West or Pembroke, if you put it there at that sort of point, that's great. But then you might have an increase of 100,000 cars on one particular week. How do you charge them? And you're going to need to get those people some sort of facility to be able to charge on the day they leave to go back home again, to go home with a full tank. Right, a full tank or a full charge, full battery, whatever. You're going to need to be able to do that. And you can do that at the moment with fuel. I'm not sure you'll be able to do that with EV unless all of those holiday parks, all of those destinations within that tourist region can cope with that demand. We're seeing an increase in Cornwall. I'm not sure Pembrokeshire have caught up with it and will do it anytime soon, but it's a really interesting model for any tourist area. How do you cope with increased demand, which is only seasonal and typically on a changeover day? So on the Saturday, going home again, how do you cope with it on that day?
Well, we talked about this I was driving up to the Lake District for my dad's birthday and I gave you a ring and we were talking about all of this on the phone. And I was describing how I had just taken the kids away and the place where we were hiring a little caravan, specifically, it was a little one, like a little tow along that had been dumped for the summer in someone's field. It was very cute. And it had a little sign on it saying, do not charge your car out of this window, because they'd obviously had people just blowing the fuse, or hopefully not, but really trying everything with extension cables to get their car charged. So it made me really think, and one of the reasons I rang you for swapping ideas is to just think about, well, hang on, how much would you be willing to pay? So you're already paying 300 quid to stay in a funny little caravan. If someone said to you, plus 50 quid for a full car charge, would you do it? I'd do it. And if it was managed through an app, like we know is possible, that's just a great way of getting a little bit of extra revenue, giving the confidence for that person to return. Airbnb now have Do You Offer EV Charging as one of their drop options for people shopping around for somewhere to stay. So it is coming. Change is coming, definitely. And I think what the sort of key message here is, it takes somebody with a little bit of an innovative idea to take a punt on this, and then others will follow. Nobody can answer the question that I always have about what is the tipping point between availability of DC charging, like we described with the hubs in small towns, versus destination charging. I think it all boils down to behaviours. People want to go home starting their journey with a full charge. Most will probably make it home back to their home charger. It's only really people like me, or that once that 40% of driveway charging capability is fulfilled, that we are going to see a little bit of a bigger problem with people having to stop because they need to charge, because they can't charge when they get home either, in the same way that they're not sure if they can charge when they get to where they're going either. So the only answer is more, please, but the right charger in the right place.
Yeah. And, you know, those caravan parks and campsites, there is a way to solve it. I think I know how to solve it. But for those people to invest, you need more EVs on the road and more of those customers demanding, when I get there, by the way, can I charge my car? That's going to be a question. You know, that's a financial question, essentially. When is that going to be economically viable to do so, to make that infrastructure in place for all of those pitches? But it's there, it's coming. And there is a way to solve it with software, as you said. I've been to places in Cornwall. I remember going to a holiday village with chalets in Cornwall, where exactly the same thing, big red signs outside each building that said No EV charging. Like it was, you know, it was almost like a no smoking sign sort of thing. Like it was a negative thing, no EV charging here. But it's all because of the as you say, the demand on the electronics, or demand on the site that they couldn't cope with. They weren't necessarily anti-EV. I think it was more the case, it'll cause us problems if you do it.
And we shall solve it. We absolutely shall. Now, what's really interesting about you, though, is despite your extensive knowledge, you are the transport hierarchy dream, because you don't own a car. You hire a car if you have a long distance journey and use public transport the rest of the time. And when I asked you what your fun facts were, which I was very proud to say I knew most of them, but this one cycles 15 miles in less than 45 minutes most days. Is that indoor or outdoor? Because that's very impressive.
It's not as impressive as the T-shirt I'm going to have made that says, I am the transport hierarchy dream. That's that's what I'm going to wear. And I'll put your face on that as well and say, you know, a quote sort of mark. It's both. And I'd love to say that I can prove it. I can prove it on my Peloton, absolutely, that I smash out 50 miles in a little under 45 minutes most days. On the road, I don't time it, and that's my excuse. But essentially, yeah, I do like to do that. I used to commute so much when I lived in London originally. I went around the world a little bit and ended up in the Channel Islands, but not on a bike. That was a career thing. But I commuted lots, and I always loved cycling. And now I just do it sort of for exercise, but I used to commute. But yeah, I don't own a car. I don't personally own a car. I use public transport whenever I can, and hire a car when I need to. And that's getting more and more interesting, because actually now you have the electric choices generally. And what I find interesting there is that handover, obviously they don't know what I do for a living or how well-versed I am in the EV space, but the handover varies greatly in what they tell you. First of all, this, you know, a year ago, they'd be confused if I asked for an EV. Now they're not confused, but they can't really explain what I need to do with it very well. So I guess in another year, it might be a pretty more standard thing. Hand over the keys and off you go. You know what you're doing, like it would be for a combustion engine. But yeah, I hire cars. I use public transport and my bike as much as I can. So I'm a non-car guy. I do have a driver's license, but I don't own a car.
Yeah, but you're proving that that's such a good way of doing it. And I was speaking to Mark Newbury from Europe Car yesterday, and he was on the EV rally with their Europe Car team, and it was just great to hear the newbies, if you like, being part of the rally, because for them, that's all the learning curve that we're all on. And I just think it's commendable. And that's where I first ever met Europcar 2, was living in Bristol. I sold my car, even though I had a baby and two stepkids at the time. Just wasn't necessary to have one, because there was car clubs everywhere. There was a car club within half a mile of the house, cost you a tenner to do the little scout trip run, which sounds expensive, but actually in the grand scheme of how much a car, I don't think people actually realize how much a car costs every year, which is why I find fleet the more fascinating scenario, because those are vehicles that have to be on the road, or that should be on the road, versus vehicles that are single occupancy or sort of habitual. They perhaps not. And we talked a little bit about your family earlier, and I want you to delve a little bit deeper for me into, when you think of them growing up, what sort of thing do you think will motivate them for their career choices and their decisions? Even you flipped from wanting to make money versus wanting to make a difference, and hopefully still making money whilst making a difference. But that's the crux of it. What do you see in them as our future, the kids of today? What do you think they'll be motivated by?
I think for mine, so I have three daughters and two rats, actually, that I live with as well. They're female as well. So most of my dependents are female, sort of, and which is great fun, actually, and I support that massively in any way I can. But it's interesting with them, because my three daughters in particular are very creative. I don't know where they get that from, but they're very stagey, and they sing and they dance and act. One was actually auditioned and successfully auditioned for the English Touring Theatre's production of Macbeth recently, which has just been done with you guys in Bristol, actually. But she did 12 nights for them. That's a Shakespeare joke there. Like, she did 12 nights. But that was fantastic. So they're in that sort of space. They want to continue in that sort of space, right? They're creative. They want to be on the stage. They want to be showing off. As I said, I don't know where this comes from. But really what I find interesting in their sort of hopes and desires and dreams, they're not old enough. Mine are like 12, 10 and 9. They're not old enough to really think about the world so much yet. But I do notice that they're sort of, the things that I was passionate about when I was their age are so different now, right? So, for instance, they think there's nothing more exciting than potentially having an electric car on the drive. They think it's amazing. What, we're going to get an electric car? We're going to get a Tesla? Are you joking? You know, they think it's the most amazing thing ever. And that's really positive, right? Because they like it. Whether they've been convinced that it's a status symbol or not, I don't know. But they're excited about that. They're really keen on that. You know, they're also keen on the new Mean Girls musical that I went to watch with them yesterday. And they're very excited about that as well. I'm not sure that's as much merit as an electric car does.
We've run out of time. I'm sorry we can't continue this conversation.
But genuinely... what I'm encouraged by is what they think is exciting, what they want to see and what they want to do in the world is much more tuned to goodness and community and love, essentially, and happiness, rather than how do I make as much money as possible, which is kind of the world I grew up in through fault or design. I don't know, but kind of that's the world I grew up in. How do I make as much money as I can? And they don't think like that at all.
No, which is a wonderful, and I'll be very honest and say I think that is wonderful, because like I alluded to a minute ago, I hope that there is a way to earn a living, even if it isn't making tons of money, just getting that amazing feeling of satisfaction from spending each day doing something productive that you feel meets your values, your aims and your priorities as a human being on earth. And I certainly do get that from 20 years in infrastructure, be that walking, cycling or car parks. And now I'm on the software side of things, which, guess what, still caters for what I think is one of the most important features of our life, which is transport. Touches everyone, gives you adventure, gives you stability, gives you opportunity to go with your family on holiday and feel that wonderful family loving time, or for friends or anything at all. You mentioned there with sort of creative want to be on the stage. You got thrown out of a stage concert for stage diving, although you did write Convert for stage diving, which threw me a bit. So please, I think this could be our final story, but I want to hear it. What did you do?
I think when you ask for a list of fun facts, they're always quite cringy, aren't they? To sort of, what do I think? What do I want people to know about me that's fun? And I noted a few down, but I knew that wouldn't make you laugh, Sarah. So essentially, yeah, you go to a concert, and I think they kind of, especially that was back in about 1996 or seven, whenever No Doubt were first out, and were big anyway with that Don't Stop song with Gwen Stefani singing that. And I went to one of their concerts, and I think it was in the
Don't Speak, wasn't it? Don't Speak.
Don't Speak, that's it, not Don't Stop.
You were definitely a bit drunk that day, maybe.
Don't speak. You're absolutely right. So, and they, you know, the sort of music and stuff, it encourages that sort of behavior. So I was surprised by it. I've stage dived quite a few times, but I was thrown out. The security didn't like my behavior doing it in this particular concert. So me and my friend Lee were thrown out for enjoying ourselves too much at a concert. That was a fun fact. The others, I'm glad you didn't really talk about. And of course, everyone's got hundreds of facts, haven't they? But there's only certain ones that they let through the net or through the sieve at any particular time.
And speaking of net, another one of yours was, and I quote, audience, very, very good at badminton. So if anybody else is good at badminton, I'd like you to take on Thomas Edwards and see if that's true.
Yes, I used to play it so much when I was younger. I had a couple of years off, and I've recently started again, actually, and realised that actually people are always a bit overwhelmed by how deft I am with a light racket. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's my size and my wrist strength, I guess. It's all about the wrists in badminton. So
yeah, it's that. Yeah, very, very good. And I think your rapid fire brain, I think, does match your rapid fire ability to be chasing the shuttlecock around and scoring highly at badminton. It's that sort of hand-eye coordination is directly linked to knowledge recall. And I've really enjoyed what I've loved about this conversation and every conversation we ever have is there's always this wonderful depth of knowledge presented so beautifully by you that there's nobody that wouldn't be interested or understand what you're trying to describe. And, you know, that's what I really wanted you to come on. So I'm so grateful that you had the time.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice to hear. As you know, and as you stated, I am the transport hierarchy dream. So, you know, I'm not surprised that you're picking up on these sort of things.
Well, as petrolhead Jeremy Clarkson would say, on that bombshell.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me on and chatting to me. I agree. You know, every time we talk, we tend to have a bit of fun and work out some of the problems that we're both facing together. So it's always good to chat to you. And I'm pleased to be doing this with the EV Cafe.
Thank you. And many more problems to solve. We're absolutely not taking off the gas on this one. So you are indeed a wonderful pioneer and innovator and collaborator. So you absolutely fit the bill for being here. It's huge thanks from me. And I'm sorry that we had to end our time, but please do connect to Thomas Edwards. He works for Switch EV via LinkedIn. And of course, if you don't already do so, follow our EV Cafe channels. All friends of EV Cafe, welcome to join the community. The aim is accelerating the transition to zero emission vehicles. So anything that you can do to help us unlock that for the masses, join in. So it's huge thanks from me and goodbye.
Bye-bye.